You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend. Tracy, it's Saturday. We just had our patron hangout a couple of days ago, and all of you people in the Midwest bragging about your rain as Colorado's in a drought was pretty disheartening for me. I mean, I just felt like I felt attacked.
I mean, bragging is such a strong term, especially when I've been getting calls from my renters because the basement's flooding. So I don't know. I don't know, man.
Meanwhile, in Colorado,
on the other hand, I am going out on a kayak this afternoon because the rivers are real high.
Meanwhile, in Colorado, we're on water restrictions in most areas. And you know that I hate HOAs because HOAs are garbage and I want them to all fucking burn to the ground. The HOAs are sending their residents warnings that they're going to start hitting them with fines because they have brown grass. They have brown grass because they're on water restrictions and they can't water their lawns. Fuck you, HOAs.
Oh, so this is like the Joseph Heller Catch-22 version of living in Colorado right now. Got it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, man.
So now that Sam knows that cussing is allowed.
well job clearing that bar for us there.
Fuck yeah.
So that voice you just heard, folks, is Sam J. Miller, who's with us for like a pile of things, in addition to the fact that he is just preternaturally cool as a human being. Sam, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry that the apocalypse is making us all miserable. We either have too much rain or not enough rain or, yeah.
How's it in New York now, other than very blue and orange?
Very blue and orange. We actually got out of town this weekend to visit a friend who had a new baby in Connecticut. So we're not in the city, but New York is good. It's a rare utopian moment of like everyone's joy scrolling all the time of like, look at all the happy people doing happy people things.
Shiny happy people holding hands.
Exactly. I hate sports, but I am a New Yorker and I do enjoy the joy that everyone is experiencing.
I love all the things where people from Europe are coming over here and discovering things that they never knew existed. Like Buc-ee's of all fucking places. And also like, I do love the stories about how all the Scots have just drained Boston of all the alcohol, which
they're kind of like these cheerful drunk locusts. My understanding is they're now migrating from Boston up to New York. And so I guess you're next.
I don't know. We have a very high alcohol content. I'd like to see them try to drink us dry.
Yeah. The alcohol by volume comparison of Boston to New York could be a whole new rivalry, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there's people pissed off about it already.
We're figuring out ways. Oh, no. We should stop talking about this. We're going to end the joy scrolling. So on the subject of joy scrolling, Sam is joining us because we follow each other on the socials and we've read each other's stuff and sort of like keep colliding from time to time in different spaces. And the thing that so excites me about the work that you've been doing kind of forever, but particularly in the last year or so, is that you've got a lot of projects that are either in progress right now or projects that are recent for you that all have this really fun thread in common of kind of an alternative approach to narrative in some, whether it's like literal format or like distribution or other things like that. And so I want to start with the most recent thing. And like by most recent, I mean new episodes coming out regularly. You've been publishing a novel serially via Substack. So can you talk to us about that?
I have. It seems like a terrible idea, but so far it's been really fun. I traditional publishing has treated me well. My fifth book came out in October, and I'm acknowledge its many problems, but also enjoy it. But one thing that I think is a real challenge, just in like an unbreakable logistical rule, is that like it takes two. Like even if I snap my fingers and wrote a brilliant novel right today about ICE, say, or anything that's happening in this country, and my agent snapped his fingers and sold it immediately, it would still be a year and a half to 2 years before it hit bookstores. So the idea of writing in conversation with what's happening now just isn't really possible through traditional publishing. And so with things happening so fast and so much going on, and me carrying so much sort of like anger about, you know, the state of the world and our country, I really wanted to tell a story that could sort of like engage with the now more, not in the sense of like, in this chapter, we're at war with Iran, of like ripped from the headlines, like what's happening now, but just like, these are the problems that are ongoing. This is the resistance that we're seeing that's really exciting and inspiring. This is a sort of dialogue with that. So Jupiter Ruins Everything is a novel set 3,000 years in the future in space on the moons of Jupiter, where it's sort of like the Count of Monte Cristo meets ICE, where this guy who was done horribly wrong by all these people has left Ganymede, amassed a massive fortune and tons of evil skills, comes home to wreak his bloody revenge plot against all the people who wronged his family, but finds that there has been a sort of slide into fascism and mass incarceration of off-worlders, and is sort of like torn between the desire to wreak revenge and the desire to stop oppression. So fun times, hopefully. So it's been really fun. It's been really fun to write this way. It's really hard. I'm a person who likes, who sort of like usually figures out 75% of the way through the book that like, oh, that's the antagonist, or oh, that's that person, that's that person's secret brother. And then let me go back to chapter three and start to lay the groundwork for that to emerge organically for the reader. But chapter three was published 6 weeks ago, so yeah. I don't have that option now. So it's been hard, but it's been really fun, and it's a good challenge. I am enjoying the sort of like freewheeling nature of it, and the sort of logistical challenges.
There was something that someone sent me. I get a lot of reels from a lot of people. This was Fallout New Vegas. Are you familiar with Fallout New Vegas as a video game?
No.
So Fallout New Vegas happened because the company behind Fallout wasn't going to be able to put out a new game for several years, like a lot of years, because they had so many other things on their schedule. And so what they did was they outsourced it. And they outsourced it to another game company and said, but here's the thing. You got to have something out in like a year, year and a half. It's got to be a year, year and a half. We don't want to wait that long for another Fallout game. So you got to do something now. And so this other company did it. Like they wrote it. They coded it. They put it out. It was buggy. It had problems. But it's also like a favorite of the Fallout people, like the fans of Fallout. I've kind of played a little bit, but I would not call myself a fan of Fallout. Like I'm not that guy. But the point being, when you're under that pressure of a deadline and you don't have a chance to fix it, number one, it like generates all this creativity and 100%. It feels more real.
Yeah.
And the people who are engaged with whatever it is that you're creating, like that kind of comes through to them. And so it becomes something that they love a little bit harder and they get more invested in. So I'm saying all this to say, like, I think it's really cool that you're doing that because you can kind of maybe see that in real time as your, yeah, as your engagement goes up.
100%. And I also am stealing things because like something happened in a recent chapter and I was hanging out with a friend who was reading and she was like, oh, please tell me that was like a Chekhov's gun thing for this. And I'm like, that is what I meant. And I'm like, oh, that's a really good idea. I totally didn't intend that, but that is exactly what that's going to be. It's not normal that, or at least not conventionally 21st century publishing normal for you to like be in conversation with your readers as it's being published.
Right.
And that's been amazing. It's also just like, you know, I am of a certain age where like, my two favorite television shows of all time are Battlestar Galactica and Avatar The Last Airbender. And
which Battlestar those, Galactica?
I'm not.
Which one?
The reboot.
The reboot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So both of those I joined like in the middle of season two. right? Okay. Like the reality of watching television used to be that you would catch it when you started, and that could be anywhere. The idea that you can just at a moment's notice begin a show from scratch is like unheard of, right? That's not the way that television used to be. And so every episode had to understand that there will be people joining who have not seen any episode before this. And so they had to like make it comprehensible to you. And so like just like looking at the storytelling tricks of old episodic television to recognize that like my audience is growing every week, I get new subscribers. So, you know, the fact is that like people are not going to know who X, Y, and Z is. So like, you know, part of that is just having like a little thing up top about like previously on. And part of it is having like a cast of characters page where people can click and like see who this person is. So yeah, it's a fun logistical challenge. I'm having a really good time with it.
It's also fun because every time I sit down to play Pathfinder with my friends, you know, the question goes out, so what happened last time? And I go, previously on.
Yes, exactly. And it doesn't make sense for a written text. It should be previously in Jupiter.
Yeah. Dreams,
but it's an homage to, you know, yeah, both Avatar and Battlestar would have like previously, sure, on. So, yeah.
But I think the question that the listeners would ask at this point is twofold. One, do you actually have a plan?
Well, like the Cylons.
And number two, in your text anywhere, is someone slowly building up their cabbage empire?
There is a plan, but like the Cylons, the plan might turn out to be fake. Right? Like, I don't know how deep y'all's Battlestar Galactica.
I know my Battlestar.
Yeah. So, you know, every episode began with the sort of like summary, yep, that included the something Cylons, and they have a plan. And yeah, then after the series ended, they made a TV series called like a mini series called The Plan. And it was like not a good plan.
It was garbage. It was absolutely garbage. The only thing that came out of that was a really great song from Bear McCreary.
Yeah, I mean, Bear McCreary rarely does anything wrong. Yeah. And the guy who played Young Adama was hot. But other than that, it was a disappointment. So, yeah, there is a plan. It's a very loose plan. It's a very freewheeling. Like, I know that these things will happen. I also sort of like part of what I think is exciting about exploring new forms of storytelling and publishing is that you can give power to people in different ways. And so like, you know, while the core text of Jupiter Ruins Everything is free, there's a paid subscriber level where you can get like spicy deleted scenes and other things. And you get to vote in polls on what happens next of like, okay, is he going to go kill this guy now? Or is he going to hook up with this guy or both? You know, that kind of storytelling of like giving people the power to choose is really fun. And of course I'm not giving people the right to kill somebody off who I have concrete plans for their death 15 chapters later. But it is exciting to sort of like open it up and see what people are responding to and feeling and not feeling.
I feel like we're living in a world right now as people who write and who care a lot about writing, where there's a lot of pundits of various kinds trying to tell us what the future of writing is. They're telling us that it comes from a beep bop boop box that is controlled by Silicon Valley people, that is ultimately programmed on things we and our peers created in the first place. They're telling us that it's all streaming now. They're telling us that, you know, traditional publishing is dead. They're telling us every different sort of formula of hot take. And what I love about what you're doing here, in addition to all the things that Patrick already said, which totally co-signed, but what I particularly love about what you're doing here is it feels like the perfect fusion of a kind of retro move of serialization, which goes like all the way back to like we're dealing with like Dickens and even his forebears there, right? With this recognition that we are living in a world where the barriers between creators and their audiences are as thin as those creators are comfortable with them being. And you're kind of taking advantage of that because the enthusiasm of and the response of your audience to your, yes, of course I planned it that way, moment can help drive you forward. There are so many lonely moments in writing when you're sitting there telling yourself, no one wants to see this. No one cares about this. I am banging my head against a brick wall. What is even happening here? And that can be combated by that that response that you get on the socials from someone saying, so like, oh my God, I couldn't believe that last chapter. I'm so looking forward to what happens next. And now you've got that push. But it's also drawing on something that is just a fundamental skill set that you've had for such a long time, and that you cut your teeth with phenomenal recognition and success as a short story author. And so you're able to take the skills that you've built as a novelist and show them off through something that in its units probably looks and feels a little bit more like sitting down to do a short story, but a short story that is episodic in a sense. And so I just kind of love how you're pulling together things that are natural to you and motivating to you and are kind of a response to the creative environment we're living in, without it just being like, yes, hot take people, tell me what my creative future is.
Yeah. Thank you for that. That's very kind. And yes, I very much am like, I am not panic is a strong word, but like the realities of what publishing looks like now, the realities of what technology looks like now, the realities of what the job market looks like now. It's a really scary moment on a number of levels. And so in some ways, sort of like hearkening back to older technological models of distribution is really rewarding and exciting. It helps me feel like there's some level of control of it. There's also like, I'm not going to lie and say that like it's perfect, right? You know, Substack is a profoundly problematic platform, and the fact that all the platforms are hugely problematic.
I was going to say they're all problematic. Yeah, they've all got problems. Yeah.
It's a small comfort to me. We're still in the belly of the beast. If we want our work to reach people, it's still going to have, we're going to have to go through some channel that's icky on some level. And it's hard, right? Like, you know, part of why I think I have enjoyed traditional publishing so much is that I don't love constantly talking about my work, and I like the idea of like someone else being responsible for its distribution and marketing, but that's not the case now. And I have to sort of like be constantly talking about it and probably annoying people because I'm like, you know, constantly mentioning it. So, it is not a utopian exercise in creativity, but I doubt that there is such a thing.
Yeah. So I do want to take advantage of the time we have here. So for those of you who are like, I'm not a Substack kind of person. I don't know that I want a serialized experience. I want to be able to just have my story in front of me and know what I'm getting into. This tendency that you have to be really sort of experimental and to take advantage of opportunities and formats and stuff, it certainly does not stop with Jupiter Ruins Everything. Like, for example, for people looking for something in the short story novelette range of things, congratulations on your Locus Award nomination for 2026 for Courtney Lovecraft's Book of the Dead, which was on Nightmare Magazine, which is interesting on so many levels as a story, not least of which is the fact that the format of it is the script of a video podcast. It is in and of itself kind of existing. It is an online published short story that is doing its best to be a different format at the same time. And I'd love to hear about what inspired you to say that's the right container for what I want to do here.
Yeah, I mean, I love a story, like a non-conventional narrative, right? Even like we can go back to like epistolary novels, novels written in diary entries. Sort of my modern formative influences are Ken Liu's The Man Who Ended History and Ted Chiang's Liking What You See, a documentary. My Clarion classmate, Carmen Maria Machado, wrote an amazing short story called Inventory, week two of Clarion, which is sort of like presented as a list of sexual partners and sort of tells the story of the apocalypse through that list brilliantly. So I love that idea. I love the idea of like an unconventional format. I think that makes a story, if you can land it, if you can figure it out and navigate it, I think that makes a story feel really exciting and fresh. And sometimes it's just the right way to tell a story. And honestly, I had the title, Courtney Lovecraft's Book of the Dead, came to me in 2008. I sort of like thought, oh, that's a great title. And so for a while, I thought it was sort of about this sort of like more conventionally Lovecraftian cosmic horror about like this album that was recorded, but it was never finished. It was released with like a fake track because the real last track was lost. And when you find someone finds the real last track and is trying to like get it released. And it turns out that if you put it on the album and release the album as a whole, it's like, you know, Necronomicon style, going to open up a portal and drive listeners mad and usher in a, we've all read that story before. And so it felt kind of too familiar for me. And it took me a long time to sort of figure out who Courtney Lovecraft was. And it wasn't until I sort of like was watching an interview with one of my favorite drag queens, Sasha Colby, who was saying that for her, drag is a tool to empower people who have been disempowered. And I was like, oh, she's a drag queen. And then sort of like the story fell in place around that. And that the sort of like podcast format felt like a really good way to tell her story of like, you know, she has to pass a message on that is going to drive people mad or somehow unleash cosmic horror upon the world. But let's do it in a way that to me at least feels more unfamiliar.
I love it. I love it. And then finally, before we get into the fun and games that is Picks of the Week, this is a little bit of a callback because we're looking at like early 2025 here. For folks who really love a retro kind of feel, they may remember back in the, gosh, I think, was it 60s and 70s that the Ace Doubles were coming out? My dates are probably wrong on that, and I anticipate Cannoli Joe will issue me corrections as needed. He's one of our patron listeners. But Red Star Hustle was part of a saga double released in 2025 with its companion novel Apprehension by Mary Robinette Cole. How on earth do you end up in the year of our Lord 2025 doing a double feature novel with like the flipped format and the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, by the grace of God, I guess, just the dumb luck. I actually like wrote Red Star Hustle. My agent went out with it, couldn't sell it. Saga Press was one of many places that passed on it. And then like I mourned it as one does with a novel that you love and that no one wants. And then like 6 months later, Saga Press was like, hey, is that thing still available? And yes, it was. And so I wasn't as familiar with the Ace Doubles. There was actually Tor did a series of doubles in the must have been the 90s, where they're sort of like older. They weren't new. At least the ones that I had weren't. They were sort of reprints. Like older reprints of like Hugo winning novellas and short novels. And like there was like I had like a Kate Wilhelm one and I think Connie Willis had one. Anyway, I had loved those and I just love, you know, innovative formats and like short novels a lot. I was really excited to do it. And I'm a huge Mary Robinette Kowal fan. And I was very honored to share the book with her. And her book it was sort of like a cosmic coincidence that they reached out to Mary Robinette and said, do you have something? And the something that she had was like a space noir thriller, which is what Red Star Hustle was. And so they sort of like fit together very well. And we put some Easter eggs in each other's work to sort of like, you know, to imply that they're in a shared universe. Nice. So it was really fun. And I consider myself really fortunate because, you know, it's an innovative idea. And we don't see a lot of those in publishing. Publishing is sort of like, is always a shit show, but its particular species of shit show right now is particularly egregious, where I think a lot of publishers are really just constricting what they do and banking on like things that they think will be like big.
Yeah. What's the safe play?
What's the safe play? What's the new version of the thing we've already done? And so to sort of do something that's, while yes, it's a hearkening back to an older format, it's not a safe play in that like modern readers won't have a huge experience of this idea of an omnibus that contains like different books from different authors.
Yeah. I like the physical novelty of it though. Like there's lots of push towards, we've had anthologies for forever, but there's lots of push, not a bad thing, towards ebooks and towards audiobooks and different formats like that. I do a ton of reading on audiobook, but there's just something very tactily satisfying about the idea that you have these two books that are together in the same binding, that are literally physically inverted relative to one another, that they have their own respective covers, that they're this kind of literal physical fusion that I think also kind of capitalizes on, like, you know, one of my son, he just finished his first year in college, and one of his favorite places to go hang out in his college town is a vinyl shop called Pizza Records, so-called, amazing, because they use pizza boxes to send you home with your vinyl. He doesn't even own a record player. He just likes to buy, right? He just likes to walk around and, like, absorb the vibes.
I was gonna throw out, I think Subterranean did some of those as well, like special
may
edition
have,
books
yeah.
in the 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14 era when I was getting a ton of books from them. I feel like they did a bunch of those too, which is kind of cool.
Which, again, and then the theme of the safe play and the kind of the fragility, I guess, of risk taking and things in publishing. Moment of silence for Subterranean Press. The news, for those who don't know what I'm referencing among the listeners, news was shared online just in the last week or so, that Subterranean is going to be in the process of winding down over the next year to 2 years. They have a publishing schedule planned out, but I want to say beyond the end of 2027, that's going to be the end of them as a publisher. If you're not familiar with Subterranean, if you can get your hands on some of the things that they have done, they've had this wonderful tendency to approach authors with really interesting formats, interesting choices for art and for publishing, and they often do very limited print runs. The word boutique feels a little loaded, but I think it's like the best version of boutique. And so, yeah, I'll be very sorry to see them go.
Yeah, we used to get a ton of arcs from them.
I mean, it is really tragic, but it is like also like really good on them for sunsetting in a really like thoughtful way that like so often you hear about publishers being like, so we told you we were going to publish your book, or like, you know, like 10 people had books that they had been that had been accepted and were scheduled to publish and like, nope, sorry, we're done. You know, it's being an independent publisher, being an independent, like a small business, is always really hard. And to do, like, sometimes you just get into like a really tough situation where there's no way to get out without hurting people, including yourself. And so, like, good for Subterranean for being able to sort of wind it down in a way that honors what they've built.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I feel like I introduced a downer there, and that we need to compensate. Maybe compensate with picks of the week. What do we think?
Love that. Love this.
We'll get to picks of the week. Just hold your horses. We'll get there. Before we do, I wanted to talk to you for just a second about $5. I know. You're shaking your head now. Look, they say that $5 doesn't go as far as it used to, and they're kind of right. Can you get a cup of coffee for $5 these days? Some of you are saying yes. Like a black coffee, right? You could get a small black coffee probably for $5 somewhere, but you're not going to be able to get one of the fancy ones with the stuff in it. Shot of this, shot of that. Those are going to cost you a lot more. So that $5 is not going to get you that. But you know what? There's a place where you can get a ton of value for just $5 a month, and that is patreon.com/functionalnerds. Let me break it down for you. $5 a month, and you gain access to things like our super secret Facebook group, which has been going on forever, our brand new and popular so far, I'm enjoying it, a lot of other people are enjoying it, but our brand new Discord server, which is also super secret. Can't get there from anywhere else. You have to be a patron of the Functional Nerds to get there. You get a monthly video hangout. And those are really cool. That's me and Tracy host. And the patrons, like you, if you become one, get to hang out with us. And we all chat. And we talk about the things that are going on in the world and have a little bit of a nerdy conversation. We talk about books sometimes and movies and other things. So you get that for $5. And on top of all of that, one of our most popular things that listeners absolutely love, you get the Patreon exclusive episode of the pod that we call Just Us. That is just me and Tracy talking about stuff. And by the way, if you joined today, you would get all the back episodes of that, I believe, which is kind of cool. And that's all for $5 a month. I mean, come on. What are you waiting for? Head over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and help us keep the lights on and keep this thing we call the Functional Nerds Podcast rolling on. While you do that, you don't have to like pull your earbuds out or stop listening. We're just going to jump right into the other thing that listeners really, really love. It's called Picks of the Week.
All right, Patrick, you're always a good solution for downers. So undowner us.
So I have two this week. The first one is I finally saw the movie Song Sung Blue.
Okay.
And if you're not familiar with this is Hugh Jackman, and I'm going to blank on her name, but she's Goldie Hawn's daughter.
Kate Hudson?
Kate Hudson, thank you. Okay. It's them, and they're playing a couple who meet and bond over their love of music and performing, and specifically Neil Diamond. Mm. And so they form a band that's called Lightning and Thunder, and they are a Neil Diamond tribute band. And it's a great movie. Now, it does have some points where it's going to kick you in the feels. But it's a great movie, and they're singing songs, and they're getting their community. It's based on a true story from this couple who did this in real life and like became very, very, very popular because of how well they did Neil Diamond songs and the band that they put together and stuff. And that's currently on Netflix. So that's worth your time. The other one is, for me, as you know, the sun comes out, the temperature warms up, and then I cook every meal on the grill. Yeah. Because that's who I am. And so for the next, 3 months, it's like, what do you mean side dish? And so I have found a new marinade that I like for when I'm going to quick grill something. And this is have you heard of Kinders?
I have, yeah.
So Kinder's marinades, I've been using two different ones. They have a chipotle and garlic one. And then they have one that's specifically for grilled chicken that's a garlic and herbs. Mm-hmm. And oh, man, a lot of flavor in those. So I've been buying some chicken and then I'll put in the marinade overnight and then cook it the next day. And it's just been amazing. So those are my two things that you can
dinner
enjoy yourself.
Dinner and a movie.
Dinner and a movie. Yes. Yeah. I put them on the Traeger, obviously. So good stuff.
Very cool. Sam, what has been bringing you joy?
Well, because I'm writing a bloody revenge story and I'm writing it serially, I figured I owe it to myself to read The Count of Monte Cristo. And side note, I got it on Kindle, which is a wise choice because if I had picked up a physical copy of it, I would never have read it because it's 1,900 pages long.
Yeah, nope, real quick.
and I was like, why have I been reading this for 4 hours and I'm 2% of the way in? but it's fucking great. It's a fucking great novel. I just keep waiting for it to make a mistake and it never does. And it's like, books written in the 1840s frequently, there's things we figured out. Narrative has evolved in a lot of ways. And so even like the best of novels from the 19th century are often chunky, clunky, not so great. And this I just love it. I recommend it to everybody. And I was talking about it with a friend who's a bookseller, and he was saying that we've been selling a lot of copies of that lately. So I choose to believe that this is the moment for bloody revenge plots are being hatched left and right. And the unfolding is imminent. And then my other thing bringing me joy is real corny. The trees are all really full of leaves now, and it's been very windy. And so the sound of this cacophony of wind in trees all around me has been really delightful. It's been, don't know, I'm trying really hard to sort of like be very in the moment and like stymie the urge to reach for my phone sound of the wind in the trees. Turns out is really awesome.
There's a very distinct sound for the aspen trees.
Oh yeah. That's shimmering cool. Kind of noise. Yeah.
Quaking. I think there's a line in the Adam Zagajewski poem about the aspens trembling, as always, prepared to confess all their crimes.
I love that. That's cool. That's really cool. All right. So we've mentioned a couple times.
Tracy, what's bringing you joy?
Yes. Well, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you
were. No. But please go. I love a good transition. And we've mentioned things like shorter novels and whatnot. And so as folks who listen know, I tend to, when I'm in a bit of a reading slump, turn to novellas. Because they feel like I can sit down in an afternoon and accomplish something, even if I'm not in my most focused place. And I had just such a lovely time reading Murder by Memory by Olivia Waite. And so if you're not familiar with it, it was published just last year. And there's a sequel to it is the right word. There is another book in Olivia Waite's series that is coming out, I think, quite imminently, actually. But Murder by Memory is a kind of Angela Lansbury-esque Murder, She Wrote type of cozy mystery set on a generation ship. Nice. And said generation ship functions so that people live their lives on the ship. And then when they reach a certain point that their body needs to be renewed, as it were, they can go and report to receive a new body and have their consciousness ported into it. Or if they decide, like, I'm done with living for a while, I just want to kind of, like, rest. Everything is too much. This feels like such a hack. I wish something like this existed in our own world, that you could take your consciousness to something called the library. And your consciousness is backed up in its most updated version to the library. And then at a pre-appointed time of your choosing, your consciousness will be taken from the library and put into a new body. So if you're like, yeah, I'm kind of worn out on this stuff here. I want to take 70 years off and just take the equivalent of a 70-year long nap and skip all this. You can, which seems like a pretty great hack in a generation ship sort of setup. Baby, there's a baby who just showed up in a bed. Baby's first podcast. So in any case, kind of a perfect time to be talking about regenerating and starting new lives. This particular character, our main character on page one, wakes up having had her consciousness in the library, and it is not the appointed time where her consciousness was supposed to return to her body. And more pointedly, it is not returned to her body. It's returned to someone else's body. And so she appears to have booted someone else's consciousness into storage against their will and has taken over a body that does not belong to her. And the reason that this happens is that she's a detective. They don't have law enforcement on these generation ships because, generally speaking, people don't break laws on scale. But sometimes there are things that people do in sort of general acts of fuckery that need to be investigated. And so there are individuals who are detectives, and she is one. So she's been called out of storage by the ship's intelligence because someone has been murdered, which actually hasn't happened before. And that's where things start. Okay. And so it's a kind of wry, shrewd, cozy mystery with a sense of humor. It's just quick as a greyhound. The whole thing is 110 pages. So I can highly recommend that if you've got, I don't know, about 2 hours of time in your life, or you just want to cozy up with something that's going to be highly diverting and rewarding, check out Murder by Memory.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
I will also throw out there, if you didn't already know this, that Murder, She Wrote is getting a reboot with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Interesting.
Amazing.
Interesting. All right. So that we've covered a lot of ground in a very brisk episode here, but you have good friend babying to get back to here. we would dare not keep you from it. That said, where can people find you and your super cool stuff out here in the universe, Sam?
Yeah, you can subscribe to Jupiter Ruins Everything on Substack, just sentencebender.substack.com. You can visit my website, samjmiller.com, has links to all my current work. I'm trying my best to be minimally social media. Instagram, I really like to take photographs. So Instagram is, I use pretty often just to share and see photographs. So that's sam.j.miller, but really my website, samjmiller.com, is the best place to find me.
Fantastic. Well, I am so delighted that you were able to join us.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a really fun conversation. And when are we doing this again?
I mean, you keep making cool stuff and I'll keep hollering at you.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, please, please consider sharing it with your friends on social media and give us a like or some stars on the platform or the podcatcher that you're listening to us on. Those likes help with the nasty little algorithm so new people can find us when searching for good stuff to listen to. If you'd like to keep up with the Functional Nerds on social media, the official podcast socials are as follows. @the-functional-nerds on Facebook. @functionalnerds_podcast on Instagram. Shut up. I couldn't get the same one. It just didn't work that way. So hush. And you know what? It's going to get worse here. And @thefunctionalnerds.bluesky, which is BSKY.social. I know I couldn't keep it copacetic. I tried, but hush. Tracy and I have our own accounts. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky. You can find us by searching. If you want me, it's ATFMB because that's just my handle everywhere I go. Or you can search for Tracy Townsend and find Tracy on social as well. Our Patreon helps keep the lights on and new episodes like this one coming out week after week, which we've been pretty good at. I mean, we're very consistent. So you might consider checking us out over at patreon.com/functionalnerds just to support the pod and help us out there, you know. It does help. Thanks again for listening. And I have one question for you before I go. Is it baseball season yet? Mr. Carpiers.
You got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry, do you know who I, like, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.